Good evening, Southeast Alaska. You're listening to KRBD Ketchikan. I'm Sean Carlson. For the next hour or so, the candidates in the upcoming Ketchikan School Board election will be taking questions from both myself and callers. If you have a question for the candidates, call KRBD the next hour at 907-225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. And without further ado, let's get to the forum. We are joined by School Board Member David Timmerman, Trevor Shaw, and Camille Booth. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
How are you?
We're good.
Excellent. Well, we'll start off with a relatively easy question. If you were elected to the school board next month, what would your priorities be? And we'll start with Dave.
You know, my priorities wouldn't change from what they are now. It's keep on working on funding, dealing with the assembly on the budget, maybe trying to repair some of those relations that haven't gone as well over the last couple of years. Of course, we'll see what the makeup of that organization is here in a week. Dropout rate, you know, that's always a hot topic for everybody. I think it's got better over the last few years. I'll probably, if I get back on, try to be IPP or Indian Policy and Procedure chairperson again. We made some good progress with that committee too, and maybe just continue to strengthen tribal relations with the school district. Activities funding, in addition to just regular budget funding, that's a big one for me, and I think it ties into academics and PBI or PBS and RTI and all those great acronyms we use with the school district.
Right, a lot of acronyms.
A lot of acronyms.
What about you, Camille?
As far as priorities, it would be my first time on this side, so I'd have a lot of learning to do. I've been an administrator and a teacher, so being on this side of that side of the table would be very different. But in terms of priorities, mine have always been student learning. I'm interested in what's happening, what the results are, who's doing it, sort of balancing those things and finding out that sort of information, seeing that, and just continuing to look at that. I am very interested in the school and Alaska Native relations here as well, and I was also on the IPP board with representing KAC, so would also love to encourage those pieces. But I think also looking at just some of those other relations with the assembly, with other folks, and sort of bringing my experience to that table as well. So.
Trevor Shaw, what priorities would you have on the school board?
Better education is always the priority, I think, for all of us, and helping reach the goal of promoting a more positive learning environment in Ketchikan schools. I've campaigned on doing so through the three basic principles of creativity, variety, and opportunity, and a more positive learning environment would increase the individual growth and academic achievement of our students. Making sure we have the funding necessary to ensure that those opportunities are there, working with the assembly. I go to school board meetings. I go to borough assembly meetings. I've lived in the community for the past 12 years. I know the issues, and it's just making sure we get from point A to point B and making sure that we have everything that is needed to provide a more dynamic and innovative education, because it needs to be more individualized, in my personal opinion. It's our job to help the students get where they're going, not to change them, and that's my priority.
Again, this is a live forum for the candidates for the Ketchikan School Board. The election is on October 1st. If you have a question in the next hour between now and about 8 p.m., feel free to call in with those questions at 907-225-9655, or for our listeners outside of Ketchikan, 1-800-557-5723. The next question, one issue that was discussed by the school board this year, during budget time and otherwise, was whether or not to purchase Apple computers versus other brands of computers. The argument being that the product may or may not be better, but they're more expensive than other brands of computers. Where do you stand on that issue in terms of costs versus quality when it comes to purchases made by the school district? And Camille, we'll start this question.
It's a little bit difficult because I'm an Apple person myself, and the quality issue is a major one. The other thing is that the ability to maintain and train, meaning that when you have multiple platforms out there, it's much more difficult to maintain folks. How do you, in terms of maintain the machines themselves, because they're so different, they're so varied, and then they're also difficult to train folks on the various uses. they change very rapidly. Different brands are super, I mean, in terms of their, both the hardware and software can be very, very challenging, whereas Apple is consistent. And so over time, you can train everybody to use Apple machines, and their training stays consistent. I think that's a big deal for teachers and students, because if you don't know how to use your machine, it's not and if it's not reliable, it's not an educational tool. So in those ways, I think the investment in having consistency is more helpful in terms of educational technology. Having the break all the time, having variable training, kind of tough.
Trevor, you're next.
I agree. Apple works very well for the educational system. For other things, maybe not so much, but the way they're formatted, a lot of the original purpose for Apple computers was the school system. And so they're consistent, they're reliable. A lot of the programs that were designed for Microsoft are now being adapted for Macintosh, which is Apple. And I think it is a good use of district money. We definitely need to advance towards a more modernized educational system. A lot of what our school district has is still based on the education system that was designed in the 60s. We need to, like I said, move towards a more dynamic and innovative school system. And I think we can do so through a consistent technology database and system.
Dave.
I'm not a big fan of Apple. I've always been a Windows guy. I'm an Android guy. I pretty much veer away from Apple. With that being said, Camille hit a lot of it on the head, and Trevor kind of reiterated that. They are based in education. They kind of started in that field as far as the first people in the market to push that button and move forward. I'm not a fan of the cost. A lot of people ask us, why don't we switch over? The switchover cost would be insurmountable at this point, budget-wise, for the district, to totally scrap an Apple system and start back over. Not to mention Jurgen and some of the fine people that work in our IT department would probably have to relearn some certifications and go back to some schooling. I don't know if that part is true for sure, because they deal a lot in networking also. since Android has taken a big share out of Apple lately and have kind of become the forerunners in mobile technology, I think you're going to see a drop in price. At least that's some of the educational magazines that I read have said that Apple's going to have to come down and compete, because there are school districts that are going towards Windows tablets that might be $299 instead of $499 or $599. And in this day of budgets, that's something that each school district's going to have to look at. Unfortunately for us, I think we're permanently ensconced in Apple right now, and it's going to take a huge something or other to get that to change. But for now, I do think we need a whole lot of digital learning. I think kids are hands-on. I've got a 9-month-old that wants my phone constantly, and although he wants to put it in his mouth half the time, he also wants to push buttons and learn from it, and he does focus in on it more than he does some other things. So I know that the aptitude for our kids are there, and I think whatever we can put in their hands technology-wise to boost performance, we need to do it, and right now it's Apple.
Again, this is a live call-in show with the candidates for the Ketchikan Gateway Borough School Board election on October 1st. If you have a question between now and 8 p.m., a little bit after, feel free to call in at 907-225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. The next issue you all actually have kind of hinted at in one way or the other so far. But this year, there was concern earlier on in the budgetary process that the school district might have to face some pretty substantial cuts to its budget. And in that debate, questions arose from the public and some politicians in town as to the relationship between the school board and the borough assembly. What is your take on that relationship, and do you think there is room for improvement? And we'll start with Trevor.
There is absolutely room for improvement. The school board needs the borough assembly, and the borough assembly needs the school board. It's the borough assembly's job to provide the local contribution, whether it be $7-8 million or more. And it's not their job to micromanage what we do with the money. It is the school board's job to handle it and decide how it is used. And it's always, every budgetary session, there's always discussion of cuts. What do we cut? Academic programs have to be the last thing you look at cutting. Improving efficiency and productivity, I think that is the first way to go about it, because you never want to cut any programs or courses or anything like that. And then you have to look at administrative costs, maintenance costs, energy, stuff like that, because you never want to touch the programs. I think if we look at sources of alternative funding, that might be a way to go. Joint business cooperations. In a community this size, you have to work with everybody, because one decision one entity makes affects the rest. And long-term strategic budgetary planning, it has to be done, because we have to have a plan, because practice makes perfect, and planning is the practice that we can do now, because we have to make sure that we have a long-term plan where we want to see things going, how we want our budget each year to align to those plans. Because without planning, what have we really got? It's the students' educational future we're talking about. It's something you can't just look at on a year-to-year basis. You have to have an absolute plan. Sure, there's wiggle room, but you need to know what you want to see happen. There are most definitely ways to improve the school board relationship with the borough assembly and vice versa. The two have to not micromanage each other. They have to be willing to sit down and work together. And I think for the public's sake, we need to sit down and work together and talk it out and find the overused word common ground. Common ground can be both good and bad. Common ground doesn't just need to be what the assembly sends over to the school board. It needs to be what the school board wants to talk about with the assembly. And I think that is very important, because we have to work together. We're both elected by the same constituents, and we have to make sure that we have a decent working relationship.
Camille.
I agree. And very well spoken, Trevor. I think the other thing is there are needs for accountability as well. I think that one of the things that the assembly feels like sometimes is that there's not a whole lot of transparency in the budgetary process. And because of that, there's this whole sense that while, you know, we might want to call it micromanaging, but they're actually asking really hard questions, and maybe those questions aren't being answered satisfactorily. And that doesn't necessarily, nobody's at fault at that. I think that everybody in education, and I've been in education a long time, tends to get very, very defensive about their programs. Wants to say, this is all about the kids, and the assembly is going, yes, it is all about the kids, but show us what's happening. Show us, you know, the choices that you're making and how those choices are being made. And I understand both sides. I think there's a sort of a need-based situation where, yes, the district has needs, and those needs need to be explained in ways that the assembly can understand, and the assembly needs to sort of explain their objections or their issues in ways that the board can understand without sort of the defensiveness level, which is also difficult. You know, you're protecting your constituency, children, and really on both sides, and trying to figure that out. And also, the assembly's got taxpayers. So I think that the big thing is to, maintain professionalism, listen, pay attention to what the issues are, and also know that nobody wants terrible education for children. That's not never the goal. The goal is quality education for children and work together as a community. So,
Dave?
All relationships on the planet could be better, whether it's my kids with each other, whether it's me and my wife, whether it's friends. Assembly and school board is no different. And it could be better. How are we going to get there? It's going to take several of us to kind of back down a little bit and try to get to that work table again. This whole idea of this suddenly being an issue and borough and board being at odds is not a new thing. It's happened the last 4 or 5 years that I've been on the board. I can't remember how long I've been on there, because I was appointed at one point. But, the board has felt micromanaged. And ultimately, Trevor brought it up, we're two elected bodies. Our job is to deal with the budget, give it to the assembly, and see what they can fund us at. I think that I got sideways with the borough myself last year when we set forth our budget based on a prioritized list that we put together based on what we thought the borough wanted money-wise and what was published and what they told us. And this isn't just this last budget cycle that we're currently in. It's the one before that I'm talking about. they gave us far less money than we were expecting, which in our mind reprioritized everything. They looked at everything below a certain line and said, you don't need that. That made us go back to the table and have to reprioritize and change things around greatly and also make cuts. We don't want to make cuts. It's a gut-wrenching, painful thing every time we do, whether it's a VOTEC class or or whatever it is, music. I mean, we don't want to get rid of any of it because we know it's all integral to the general process of learning. We know that all kids need that stimulation from the 360 degrees. Work sessions, you know. We had a work session with the assembly a couple years ago, and we basically, the school board, got chastised. And I felt like attacked in some ways. That was not a productive work session. When we wanted to have a second work session with them, we were turned down. They didn't want to come to the table. I guess they had said that they had said enough to us. I don't know. When we brought up the idea of work sessions again this year, not into work sessions again. So I think the board has tried to reach out to the assembly. I think the assembly has made up their mind on several points, and they're going to stick to their guns on a lot of those points. And there's a majority there that has that. You'll see who voted differently, and that's the minority. And again, that's who I'm going to be voting on, is those people that went with the minority, went with what they thought was right, and didn't, you know, you don't always have to look at things fiscally, I think, especially when you're talking about kids. I think that concessions can be made at different levels, whether it be financial or what. And I agree with Camille when she says that everybody's in it for the right reason. I don't think anybody got on assembly to destroy the school district. But I do think certain people have got on assembly lately that have a very distinct agenda, maybe anti-Bob Boyle, maybe anti-computers. I don't know. You can look back on some of the candidates' things that they've put on Sit News in the past and what they have said about the district. Some people have nothing good to say about the district at all from the assembly standpoint. I think that if just an assembly member every once in a while said, hey, Bob Boyle, we think you guys are doing a great job, instead of constantly saying negative, 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 I think that even little things like that could go a long ways towards repairing things. Hopefully this next cycle, things won't get as bad as they have in the past. I think that anytime you're talking about money and reduced budgets, you're going to have angst, and you're going to have this up against each other notion of battle that we have going on. Hopefully we can do that professionally. I know that I come across with no filter sometimes. I'm probably not going to change that. And I think people know what to expect from me at the table.
Again, that you're listening to a live call-in show on KRBD Ketchikan with the candidates for the Ketchikan Gateway Borough School Board election on October 1st. The next question brought it up a little bit. What strengths would you bring to the school board if you were elected, in Dave's case, re-elected? And we will start with Trevor.
I think one of my biggest strengths is that I know the community. I've lived here for the past 12 years. The people in town are the people I work with, the people I go to church with, the people I go to school with, the people that I live with. And it's always comes back to the fact that people matter most. They're not just people to me. They're my friends, my family. And friends are the family that you get to choose. And we live in such a great community. And I've been, I helped out with my first charity auction when I was 9 years old. I love community service. When people ask me what my hobby is, helping other people, just because that's what it is. People, like I said, people matter most. I think too many people come to the table with an agenda, and the agenda needs to be what works best for the people. In this case, providing a better education. And so the fact that I'm a big studier. I know facts, I know figures, I'm a numbers kind of guy. I've looked into the budget process, I've looked at records, I've looked at the documents. I've had sit-down discussions with staff, and I know the issues. I've been involved in current affairs. I go to city council, school board, borough assembly meetings. We need a fresh perspective on the school board. We need someone who kind of can come to the table and provide new ideas. And I'm an outside-the-box kind of thinker. I have a lot of independent ideas. But I also know the concerns of the people. When we're there, it doesn't really matter what our personal ideas are. When a decision is made, we have to get behind the decision as a whole, all seven of us, and make it work in the best way that it possibly can. Because like both Dave and Camille said, we're all in it for the right reasons. We may have different little ways of looking about how to go about it, but philosophically, people matter most. That's what it comes back down to. I know the people. I want to help the people. I have a vision for the future, a more positive learning environment, one that will, I think, help the community and help bring us along and help build a better future, because that's what better education will lead to, a brighter future. And that's why I'm running. I know the community. I know the people. And this is what I love to do. I'm 18 years old. I have a ton of energy. This is what I'm passionate about, and I'm ready to get to work.
The question will go to Dave next. If you're reelected, what strengths would you bring?
I think my strengths revolve around the kids themselves. I coach multiple sports, softball, baseball, soccer, basketball. The list goes on. And I try to get to know those kids beyond just that kid that I hand the ball to and say, go score or whatever. I have kids that are 17 down to 9 months, and so I know a lot of the kids in every age bracket. I have some of them call me when they have problems. They know that I'm one of those coaches that can be there for them if they can't go somewhere else. sometimes I don't deal as well with adults. And I think that that's kids are so genuine and aren't going to hide anything about their feelings from you, I think, if you come at them the same way. Adults can be a little shifty sometimes, so I tend to put up my guard a little bit more around adults. What can I bring? I think I care. You know, I have parents call me. I believe in the parental safety net. I believe that society in general should be a little bit more aware of their kids and should take care of them. I don't think the school district should have to, but we're in a place where we do have to. We have to help out. I think we need to provide as much support as we can. The cookie cutter brick and mortar school district thing, I think, is going to start going to be a thing of the past, or at least it's going to branch off into multiple different areas. I didn't graduate from high school. I'm very, very aware of this every day of my life, especially professionally. I've had to work very hard, probably 4 or 5 times harder than a lot of people who may have been a little more educated within the brick and mortar system. I might have had a few more chances instead of having to fight my way. I don't want to see kids have to fight that hard. I would like to see them graduate. I would like them to get the best education possible. Huge proponent of digital learning and alternative school system. Trevor's a bright, shining example right here of what can happen when you don't walk into the brick-and-mortar school. You can still be just as or more successful. Same thing with the Revilla Schoenbar blended model that Boyle and Wicker and everybody tried to put together this year but was turned down for whatever reasons. If we could get something like that off the ground, I think it's only going to spur more learning and capture a little bit more of those fringe kids that are on the edge of education and have the possibility of dropping out. So very aware of the fringe, care about the fringe, and I just want to keep it up.
Camille Booth, what strengths would you bring to the Ketchikan School Board?
Well, education's been my career. I've wanted to be a teacher when I was a teenager, you know, in high school, 16 years old, became one, taught for 8 years, was then a principal for 9, and all in southern Southeast Alaska. This is my home, very much so. And because of that, I have a real sense of what the growth of our region means and what we're trying to accomplish and the kids that I think that we're producing in order to stay here potentially and even, you know, do greater things. I think that I bring a sort of an educational expertise and an awareness, but also a sense of innovation. I'm also a proponent of alternative programming. I'm a proponent of technology. I have a master's degree in educational technology. Love that field. Love to see the directions that it's going. Think that we need to do quite a bit more of it to make education a little bit different. I always feel a little bit nervous when people talk about brick and mortar as if it's, you know, as if that defines any space. You know, a building is just a space. Whatever goes on in that space is absolutely the most powerful piece. And so I really appreciate what Trevor says about, you know, creating more innovative learning environments, more personalized, because I agree. I think that it is the people that matters, but those people are the kids and the teachers and those interactions. Teachers are absolutely the essence of what happens in education, and I, having been one, understand that very deeply and also understand what quality teaching is, what it looks like, what quality education is, and what it means for individuals. It's not, there is no cookie cutter. Every individual is their own mold, and I think that when we're speaking about and any educational process is that needs to be more individualized so that person can get the most out of that experience. So what I bring, I think, mostly is just a true global understanding of education from both sides, meaning from a teacher's perspective, a parent's perspective, and even a student's perspective, and bringing that all together with some innovation, some technology in there, and just a whole lot of passion for learning.
Again, you're listening to KRBD Ketchikan, a live call-in show with the candidates for the Ketchikan Gateway Borough School Board. We will be accepting calls between now and a little after 8 p.m. If you have a question for any of the candidates, call in at 907-225-9655. Or if you are not within Ketchikan, feel free to call on the 1-800 number at 1-800-557-5723. One of the things that's come up in your comments tonight, and then also at school board meetings, is technology and the use of technology and how the district can implement it, maybe improve its use. And with that come what one could call problems. I'm sure that everyone has heard about that instance at Schoenbar earlier this year, where some of the security of some of those computers were compromised and then they were taken away from the students. There was also a debate recently about installing software on the computers that would prevent students from accessing certain things when they're at home with the computers that the school district allows the students to use. Where do you stand on the use of technology by the district, and how maybe some of those privacy issues and security issues could be addressed? And to start this is Dave.
There was an incident at Schoenbar involving computers and a crafty kid or two trying to access other people's computers. The minute that was found out, the school district took great care in what they did next. Confiscated all computers, which actually was very bad on some of the kids at the end of the year that were trying to do projects and get things done. They were without their computers. Unfortunately, all it takes is a couple of people to screw things up for a whole lot of people. It's like that in just about everything. Should that stop us from using technology? No. Should we find ways to thwart their possibilities of being able to do something like that again? Yes. What do we do at home? You know, unfortunately, home isn't as protective as it used to be. A lot of kids get on the computer in their room. Their parents never walk into their room and find out what they're doing. You know, I take phones from my kids. I check their history. I do a lot of things on their computers that I'm sure they could get by. But I think it takes active parents to help in this regard. Unfortunately, I don't think the active parent pool is growing. I think it's shrinking. So it is going to rely more and more on the district to take care of these things and help police these issues. We have a great IT department that has a real good understanding of how these things work. And they're working very hard at making sure things like that have happened or could happen won't happen. We need more parental involvement at home. We need the computer to not be a babysitter, just like we didn't need the TV to be a babysitter in the 80s. We got to keep technology rolling. It's here to stay. It's going to keep growing. And we need to grow our defensive capabilities at the same pace.
The next person to answer that question is Trevor.
Technology is definitely an important part of a 21st century educational system. We got to make sure it's there. As a student, I've taken online classes. They're great. Let's just say a student up at the high school does very well in a classroom setting for history, but in math, they absolutely freeze up. A more individualized education, which our district is working to provide, and as a school board member, I will work to continue to provide, to help solve these problems. They provide math classes online. They provide many other classes online. Maybe that's something that works best for a specific student. And so, like Dave said, technology is definitely here to stay. It's an important part of correspondence and alternative learning. But we have to make sure that our systems are protected and that the privacy of the district and of the individual students are protected too. The way to go about that is we have a great IT department. We need to make sure that they continue having the knowledge and the capabilities to be able to keep our technology safe. They're very capable. They know what they're doing. Making sure that we need to make sure that they're up on certifications, that we're up on the software and everything that can be used to keep the database and system safe, you know, that is more of a techie sort of thing. And it's not our job to micromanage the IT department, but Bob Boyle is a great superintendent. He very well understands what the school board wants to see done. However we go about making sure that technology is more secure, I think Bob Boyle is going to go about it in the best way to implement that process. And I think it's going to take people who know more about technology and who understand the various issues how to fix it. It's our job to ensure that the overall policy is there to make sure that everything is safe and secure and that it works good, that it's up to date, and that everything needs to be like it is. But I think we have a great IT department. Staff is great. Making sure that those people have the capabilities and the needs that they need to keep things like they are and to prevent future compromises from happening. And I think it was a learning experience, and I think that's going to be a big issue, and it's one we need to focus on, and it's one I will focus on as a school board member.
Camille, you're up.
Technology is using technology as a learning tool is a team approach. First of all, you have to train the kids to use it appropriately, and there needs to be a graduated approach, meaning that you give additional responsibility as they get older. So with a sixth grader, they have different roles than a 12th grader in those graduated responsibilities. The tech department is absolutely essential to the process, but so are the teachers and so is the principal. Teachers need to be as well trained on the technology as the kids are, and that way they can stay a step above, because one of the challenges is when you have teachers who are not as tech savvy as kids, then kids can kind of get around the protective walls. And I think that most teachers would like to learn, but they don't have the time that they need. So that time needs to be provided as much as possible. Technology takes a tremendous amount of professional development for the teachers around you in order to be used appropriately as tools rather than big paperweights or glorified typewriters. I think another element is having the things in place. When you talk about NetNanny or some of these other tools where the kids can take the computers home, but maybe they have a proxy server where they have to come through the proxy server in order to access the internet so that all things that are blocked at school are also blocked at home. I think that helps with particularly middle school kids, maybe early high school kids. But I think that there comes to be so many problems with that. You have to, what is called blacklist or whitelist, so many sites in order to just get learning done. That opening it up as kids develop trust, because Dave's right, often a couple of kids will damage an entire process for all kids, and that's not good, because basically you're punishing everybody for the faults of a couple. And so in those ways, what sort of needs to happen is maybe those kids get the technology removed and everybody else who's done a great job with it gets the privilege of having these increased responsibilities, because it is a privilege. I mean, these kids are touching very expensive technology and using it and having it for their own tools independently. That's pretty amazing stuff, and schools are providing that. So that amazing privilege needs to also come with responsibility, training, and whatever. But also in that team approach are the parents. I believe in training parents, and most parents get nervous because they don't know how to use the technology, and I think that adding sort of a layer of parent training helps out too. And even requiring that among the, in order to take the computer home, parents need training as well. Not necessarily convenient, but definitely helpful, because then they at least know the machine that the child's bringing home. Have been in charge of a couple one-to-one implementations on a large scale, and they're extremely successful when done well. And I hope that Ketchikan is able to do that, because I really believe in that. I think that technology is absolutely essential to where we're going in the future, whether it be programming language, coding, some of the bigger things, especially if you choose to live in Alaska and want to, digitally commute, things like that. Jobs of the future that we don't even know about are going to be tech-based. And I think that we need to make sure that our kids are prepared for that.
You're listening to a live call-in show with the candidates for the Ketchikan Gateway Borough School Board. We will be asking them questions for about the next half hour or so. If you have a question for one of the candidates, feel free to call KRBD at 907-225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. Next question, it's something that's come up in the past few weeks. People maybe have not come to the school board necessarily wanting to discuss the issue. But if you sometimes go to the assembly meetings or city council meetings, it does come up. And it's an issue that clearly resonates one way or the other with the community. And that's the Library Consortium. For our listeners who may not be familiar with it, it's the agreement between the libraries in the borough. They share services like the online catalog that you go find. There's also book delivery services between the libraries. And recently, Superintendent Boyle has hinted that the school district may have to pull out of that agreement due to cost concerns. He threw out some numbers at a recent meeting about how much money could be saved if the school district was no longer part of that agreement. Where do you stand on the district's involvement with the library consortium? And the first person for this question is Dave Timmerman.
I think Bob Boyle said it best in our last school board meeting, where he likes the relationship that we've had and feels it's an important relationship that we've had, however long that program's been in place. What Mr. Boyle said was we need to make sure that everything is equitable in that. And right now, I believe the school district doesn't necessarily feel that it is equitable. It's something that me as a school board member, you kind of got to focus on different things as you are a school board member and maybe put your fight towards certain things. This particular issue, I feel that Mr. Boyle and his staff can deal with, and they will bring us a good, whether it's a resolution or whether it's a change in contract or whether it's an agreement, I don't know, but that agreement will come before us eventually. Right now, I think that the feeling with the district is that we're paying more than we need to and also providing a lot of the service, meaning I think it's our vehicle that transports the books from place to place if an actual physical building was to transfer books. So I think right now the costs are a little bit out of whack for the school district. It's something we don't want to go away. But also, when we're looking at saving 10 grand or 20 grand or 30 grand, or it means these particular kids aren't going to get this part of education, or this particular team may not get to go up and compete, that's when we have to start looking at these smaller contracts that also may mean a lot. Changes may have to happen. And right now that's still on the horizon. I don't know.
Camille next for that question.
I don't necessarily know a lot about the issue, but I would say that I'm very much a data person. And if they've gathered data on usage of the library and from the different sectors, then making sure that the contract is balanced based on real data that shows what the user ratio is or are those kind of things going on, I would say that supporting libraries in general is important because I'm a book person, of course, love libraries. But at the same time, it doesn't make financial sense for the school district. Is it balanced? What's the user rates? And those kind of questions will need to be answered too. And also the balance in terms of what's the opportunity cost of that contract.
Trevor Shaw.
I have done research into this. Actually, I sat down with Superintendent Bob Boyle earlier today to talk about this because it is a big issue. In 08, we spent $20,000 in fees, fines, whatever you want to call it, contribution to the consortium. Last year, it was $31,000, and this year, it's $41,000. And we provide anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000 a year in services, be it transportation, getting the books from one location to another, and that costs gas money, manpower, wear and tear on the vehicles. And so if you look at it, by the time everything's said and done, this year, it's going to cost us about $50,000. And it is a big issue because the alternative that Mr. Boyle is working up could potentially save us, if all goes well, $35,000. And what could we be doing with that other $35,000? Putting it into education. Like I said, better education is the key. And so it's going to be a very important decision because when the budget gets tight, when we're talking tens of thousands of dollars, it's important. And we've got to make sure what we do is the most productive and the most efficient. And that's why I'm running. I know the issues. I do my research. And I want to be there to make the best decision possible. You know, it's something that's going to come up, and it's going to be a decision we have to make, and soon, because the little decisions like this is going to be what affects the budget. And, I think the city manager and needs to work with us a little bit more because he's not being very cooperative right now. He needs to give a little room. He needs to meet with the superintendent. He needs to meet with the borough manager. They need to sit down and talk about this because if they want a resolution, they've got to be willing to negotiate. And if they're not willing to negotiate, obviously they don't want a resolution. We need to do what's best for the kids. And if that means we got to pull out of the consortium, it has to be something we have to look at. And you know what? If it comes down to when it comes down to that, if a resolution can't be made, I would vote to pull out.
If you are just tuning in now, you're listening to a live call-in show with candidates for the Ketchikan-Gateway Borough School Board. That election is on October 1st. We're joined by Dave Timmerman, Camille Booth, and Trevor Shaw, the candidates running, three candidates for two seats. The next issue I wanted to ask you about, one that receives a lot of attention both at meetings or budget times or yearly, is the activities budget, and that's not just sports, it's things like academic decathlon or the debate club, and a lot of that involves traveling around. As people know, Southeast Alaska, it's not easy all the time to get around. And the activities budget in relation to the borough is a big point of contention or something that is often discussed. Do you think that the borough could be paying more for activities? And more broadly, what could be done to help the activities budget and save it from potential cuts? And we'll start with Camille.
First of all, absolutely, traveling in southern Southeast Alaska, or Southeast Alaska, is expensive, and the fact that this conference is, you know, we have to travel so far to participate in the conference is absolutely expensive. So in terms of the what to do's, and does the borough then pay for more in activities, first of all, there, you have to know that there's other efficiencies being taken place. And once you know that those efficiencies are taking place, I think the borough would, you know, step up and do their part if they feel like all these things are being monitored. Like, okay, we've done the absolute best we can do. This is it. There's no more. And then you step up with those efficiencies. And it's hard because what do you have? You have ferries and you have airlines to do the travels, the activities budget. But I know some of the conversation revolves around, are there too many sports? Are there too many activities? Are we funding way too many things? And that's a challenge too, because you want to have a broad range of opportunities for all different types of personalities. But at what point do you say, stop, that's too much, this is too much, and have those real serious discussions about which ones come in and fall out. And again, usership, using data to figure it out. And this one is consistently hard because you want the most opportunities with kids, but and you don't want people having to fundraise constantly, although fundraising does have some really lovely community service elements to it sometimes, and I think that that's powerful. It teaches kids to also be a part of what they're working with. If you know, if you want to be on a basketball team, then fundraising is a part of your gig. However, just saying we need $140,000 more dollars for that, you know, somebody needs to pony it up, that's a pretty hard call. And I think that in terms of solutions, you know, moving into looking at efficiencies, moving into looking at, you know, what is a fair amount of fundraising for people and what are, you know, are donations feasible? What kind of things are feasible? So always challenging.
Next up is Trevor.
Most people think the activities budget is way more than it actually is. It's actually only anywhere from 1 to 3% of the budget, and 3% is a high number. It's usually 1.5 to 2%. I had somebody, a voter, say, why are we spending millions of dollars on activities? And I'm like, I hate to break it to you, but it's not millions. And they're like, well, that makes me feel better. I think it is a public conception thing, too, because we need people to know how much money we are spending. Transparency, accountability, it's big. And it's required. Right now, we have the means by which to fully fund the activities budget. The ferry system schedule, it's whacked out. It's not helping us, and I have to put some shame on the people in Juneau who didn't work hard enough with us. Peggy Wilson is the House Transportation Committee chairwoman. She didn't do her job, She didn't work with us. She didn't help us out near as much as she should have. And, you know, now the taxpayers have to pick up the bill. We have to pick up the bill. But right now we have the means by which to fully fund the activities budget, to get the kids where they need to go with the current number of sports and what the teachers and administration has said they need. Will it be the same circumstance down the road? No, but while we have the chance to fully fund the activities budget, we should absolutely do so. When the time comes down the road in the spring, we're definitely going to have to look at it again. But while we can fund it now, we should. We obviously need to look at efficiency and productivity. I've been saying that during the whole campaign. Cutting waste is big, because that way you will have more money and you don't have to touch academic programs and other budgetary items. But while we have the means, we need to fund it, because it is a big opportunity for our kids, for the students. And I have a 7-year-old brother who's very into sports. He hasn't started playing yet, but he wants to. And, you know, he's very energetic, and it's something he wants to do. He really wants it. And, you know, we shouldn't take those opportunities away from kids, whether they be 7 or 17. And we have the means to do so right now. We'll have to look at it again during budget time. But, you know, while we have the ability to do so, it needs to be fully funded.
Dave Turman on activities.
I could spend a 2-hour show on activities, so this is going to be a tough one for me.
I thought it was an issue that you...
maybe my toughest question of the night. Activities aren't funded to the level I think they should be. I think they should be fully funded. There's 281 shares within the pool, which essentially equates to students that are in an activity. And like Trevor said, it's not just sports. It's academic decathlon. There's multiple different activities out there. Those relationships that we build with other Southeast communities are huge. I've seen it with the people that have been here for years. I'm relatively new to Ketchikan, being here a couple decades. The people that I know that have grown up here still flourish in those situations where they have met people in Juneau, solidified relationships, working relationships, personal relationships, whatever. I have personally seen many, many kids turn their lives around, or at a minimum stay in school, because of activities. The activities group of kids is already held to a higher standard than the rest of the school, meaning they have to maintain a certain grade point average. They have mandatory random drug testing. So right there, you're already putting things aside in a group of people that are achieving possibly at a higher level, or have to achieve at a higher level to be able to do something. Many years ago, the state used to pay for our state travel to different places. So if we had a team that would, like the basketball team, made state, they would get their way paid by the state out of OSA or whatever. That got cut many years ago. And when that got cut, it wasn't increased in our budget line to the level it should be to cover that. So I'll just throw a number out there. Let's say it took $1 million before state kicked in. We lost $500,000. And then we're caught making up the difference of that every time one of our teams does well. Baseball did it a couple years ago, made state, flew up there, and it was 20-something extra grand or whatever above and beyond what we had budgeted for that. Are we going to deny kids their chance to go compete for the state title? Heck no. We got to let them do that. Those are huge building moments in life. Just the fact that you can catch some kids and get them turned around, or give them that carrot, the proverbial carrot in front of the cart for them to chase, I think it's worth it to have activities. Trevor's right. We don't fund it very high. I think our budget was somewhere around 500 grand total, 600 grand. I don't remember exactly. And that was still with having to go to the borough and fight with them about it and try to get them to increase our allotment so that we could feel better about how much activities. When we have, I don't want to call it free money, when we have excess money laying around, carryover funds, let's call them, one of the first things that we look at is, can we transfer any of that into activities? Because we know through data that that is helping kids, that there are kids that are achieving a higher level than they may have without that. I think that we got to keep up the good fight. This is part of where my angst comes against the assembly. They got very micromanagerial about the activities over the last couple years. Last year, they funded us a certain level and then gave us $200,000 in a grant, which I think many of them felt also meant micromanagerial grant. They wanted every piece of data that they could possibly get out of us about activities. Unfortunately, that's not the assembly's job. That's the school district's job. Otherwise, you have two school boards. And I think that assembly members need to realize that they're assembly members. School board members need to realize they're school board members. We've also had problems with the school board over the last few years of school board members thinking they were still assembly members and going behind the scenes and trying to make deals, in fact, relating to activities. The heart might have been right there. The way it went about wasn't right. We got to keep it up. We got to keep up the good fight. We got to fully fund activities, whatever it takes. As far as fundraising is a wonderful thing. Every single sport, every single activity outside of school fundraises big time. My kids are constantly fundraising for soccer, basketball, ballet, whatever it is, gymnastics. They're constantly fundraising. I would like to see that effort taken off the table for school students that are already achieving these extra goals, better grades, drug testing, being party free, whatever that means. And let's not have those kids have to go spend all that extra time beyond homework, beyond what they could be doing to fundraise. I mean, I've called in the past, I'm going to have my kids go to the assembly members' houses, and those are the first seven people we're going to visit when we have to fundraise. Because they're the ones that essentially drop the taxes to a level that they thought the taxes should be at. Unfortunately, I feel more taxed because of that. The couple hundred dollars that lowly Dave Timmerman up on 3rd Avenue with his single home dwelling, the money that I saved off that tax decrease, I'm going to have to turn around and put that into activities for my kids. So I don't save any money off a tax decrease. What's that do to all the people that don't have kids in activities? I understand that. But I think there's a lot of people out there that understand what activities do. They don't come to the podium. It's a flashpoint situation. And we just need better funding in that regard.
You're listening to a live call-in show with the candidates for the Ketchikan Gateway Borough School Board. We have about 15 minutes left. If you have any questions for the candidates, feel free to call KRBD at 907-225-9655 or 1-800-557-5723. One of the last things that I wanted to ask the candidates about was the new performance index for schools. ASPI is the acronym, and there are many acronyms. It was designed to replace No Child Left Behind. The school district has received a waiver from certain aspects of No Child Left Behind under the condition that it creates a new system to evaluate schools. What are the strengths of that system, and what are potential weaknesses that you see? And we'll start with Trevor.
The state as a whole has a waiver to No Child Left Behind, and I think that's good because, like I've campaigned on, all students are different. They have different aptitudes, skills, interests, definitely different personalities. If we were all the same, I'd be bored to death, and so would all my friends, because I definitely don't want them just dealing with Trevors. That would be horrible. There'd be too many people running for school board. So the standards by which we rate our schools, it's always a touchy issue because people, let's say they want to do it based on how many A's the students are getting or overall in the school district test performances, like on the Alaska High School qualifying graduation thing. Can't get even that acronym right, but high school graduation qualifying exams, there it is. And so the standards by which we rate our schools need to be based on the system by which we teach. If we're going to have a more dynamic and innovative school district, we're going to have to look at how the best education, the way to provide that education is the best, the means by which to do so, and then what we want to see happen, and then you rate the schools by what you want to see happen. You know, it changes from year to year. I mean, we have a lot of good schools. I mean, look at Tonga School of Arts and Sciences, North Point Higgins, K-High. Things are getting better, and it's because our school district is leading the way. We are doing a great job in educational flexibility, and that's what it really comes down to. is the education needs to be flexible. A good example, I had a friend who, when he graduated from high school, qualified for a complete athletic scholarship to high school, to college. 4 years, totally paid for. That's not what he wanted to do. He's always wanted to be an aircraft mechanic, and he's close to getting his license. We need to make sure that all of the students, whatever it is they want to do, they're the best prepared as possible. And, you know, the I'm not a teacher, but administration staff, the teachers, the academics, the people who know how what educational standards need to be, those are the people who need to be there rounding and shaping the system by which we rate our schools. But what we really need to be doing is making sure that we have a high-class education that we're providing. Because if we provide a top-of-the-line education, we're going to have top-of-the-line students. That's how it works.
Camille Booth.
NTLB was based on the premise that if we knew where students were at, we could raise them to a very specific level of ability. And then schools were based, you know, their success is then based on where all those students are based on their grade levels. In applying for the waiver, the state of Alaska was looking at, you know, is this working? Is this broad scale, broad sweeping program process working? And actually it's not, because again, it's not individualized enough. Kids are making tremendous amounts of progress, but they're not, you know, a child that is reading at a first grade level in the fifth grade might be making 2 years of progress in 1 year, but they're still not passing the fifth grade test. So a more individualized approach is necessary and should be very much based on individual progress, because then that teacher who's working very hard with that child, who's that child has made 2 years of progress and the teacher's doing great, still looks bad on paper. And that's not the right way to be, ever. Educational innovation should be, again, based on the individual. Once the person has passed that test, say the same fifth grader is in fifth grade and they should be reading at a 10th grade level, you're still assessing them at the fifth grade level. They're not making progress. They're just passing that test, which was a snap for them. That's not okay either. Progress is individualized, whether it's lower progress coming up or whether it's high progress coming up. Both need to be measured adequately because the standard that we're setting is that it's okay to come to the middle, it's okay to be right here and just pass these tests, and then we're only going to rate our school based on passing these tests. And that's truly not okay. Our kids, both at the high and low levels, deserve better than that. Because whatever progress they're making, whatever motivation, whatever heart they're putting into their learning needs to be reflected. And then those teachers who are doing those wonderful things. So is a teacher doing well if they're stopping a learner from in the fifth grade from moving forward? And are they doing well if, you know, are they doing badly if a fifth grader is still reading at a third grade level at the end of the year? No. So more individualized systems. And I really believe in that waiver and thinking differently about it. Because the ways that we're having right now, this universal screening, the working towards the middle, the ratings for school districts based on age groups is not really serving individuals who fall outside the median group. So,
Dave Timmerman on ASPI.
I'm glad I got to follow Trevor and Camille on this one, because I think it's something we probably all agree on right down the line. The fact that NCLB is kind of going away, or at least getting wavered, speaks volume to how successful that program maybe wasn't. And I think the verdict's out on this new one that we have that we're going to be up against. I'm kind of holding my breath on that, and I want to see a little bit more data. Camille's brought up data for a while in this show multiple times, and I know she's a data person. I'm a stat guy. I get that. I love numbers. I don't think we're going to see how effective or if this is better for us or what in the short term. I think we're going to see it in the long term. Does that help us short term? No. So I don't really know if there's a good answer from me on this yet. The verdict's still out. Jury's out there. I don't know. Let me talk about testing for a second. Mr. McClory came to us this was a couple years ago, about all the different tests that K-High administers at their level. It's between 13 and 17 tests off the top of my head, and it's an all-consuming task on a year-round basis for our counselors to make sure that all these tests are administered to the kids. I think the bulk of society can say not everybody is a tester. I was one of those kids. I was lucky enough to not have to do homework, and I could walk in and ace a test. There's other kids that are the exact opposite. They dig into homework. They know the material better than I did, walk in and go blank in front of the testing. I think that it's an arbitrary way to test people. Tests in general are made for X amount of people working within a certain parameter, and I don't think that we fit into that parameter all the time. We're talking again about those fringe kids. You know, maybe Trevor was a fringe kid at one point. I know I was a fringe kid. Trevor was successful navigating the fringe of our education system and has brought it maybe more to the center. Testing on Trevor? I don't know. Testing on Dave Timmerman? You know, it's really hard and it's really out there as far as what that can all mean on the bottom line. So I think we're a couple years away from being able to say, yes, this is a good replacement for what we were working under before. And it's a hard question right now.
We have about 5 minutes left, so I'm going to ask you guys as concisely as possible. Why do you want to run for the school board? Why is it something that you feel you need to do? And then just any closing remarks you have. And if I give you a wrap it up sign, I apologize in advance. I realize our listeners cannot see that, but I just want to make sure that we come in under time. And we'll start with Camille.
I want to run for school board because education is what I care about. I've dedicated my career to it and also much of my free time because I'm a reader and a researcher as well. I find it fascinating in terms of the changes in the federal, state, and local level in terms of education. It's part of my core involvement and what I care about. But I think community-wise, growth of kids. Right now I would teach at the Tribal Scholars Program at KIC and just truly love the energy of kids and educational processes. So I'd like to be a part of the policy and procedure of the Ketchikan School District.
Dave Timmerman.
You know, I love kids, and that might sound cheesy, but not a big fan of adults for the most part. And, you know, anybody that knows me will understand that. They'll know that I may have some adult friends out there and navigate well in the adult world, but unfortunately, we need people that will stand up and fight for the kids. Sometimes I don't think that that's happening. Right now, I think we have several good returning school board members on the board that work well as a team. I think we have a fantastic superintendent. You're not going to get that same reaction from everybody about what they may think about Mr. Boyle, but I think the majority of the people will say that he has his heart in the right place, he's passionate, and he wants nothing but for this educational system to get better. I'm behind that 100%, and I'm behind Mr. Boyle on that. I think that it takes several years to get to know what's going on the school board. I think that, and this is no affront to Camille, but I think that Trevor has a leg up right now as far as studying and the amount of intense time that he's put into this so far. So I think compared to the normal school board member that may be trying to get a seat, I think Trevor's doing it the right way as far as knowing what the issues are. I know what the issues are. I finally know 90% of what the acronyms are, and there's about 10 million of them. Just navigating through that for the first couple years of school board can be daunting. I finally feel like I have a grip on what's going on and can be that much more effective now.
And we're going to end this forum with Trevor Shaw. Why do you want to run for the Ketchikan Gateway Borough School Board?
Because this is what I love doing, to be able to sit here and to discuss the issues and talk about what we can do to build a better future and to help our students and to help the community as a whole. It's just what I love doing. I've been involved in community service, public service, since I was 9 years old. It's my hobby. It's my passion. And the reason I'm running is because I care about people. I have three little brothers at home. Gabe is 11, Josiah is 7, and Caden just turned 1. I care about the future that they're going to have. I care about the future that my kids are going to have. Ketchikan is a place where I want to build my future. I've lived here for the past 12 years, as long as I can remember. And it's just been great. I love it here. I know the community. I know the issues. I work hard. I study the issues. I'm a numbers, statistics, facts, figures kind of person, and I've always been one to work hard and get to know the concerns of the people, because people matter most. And Ketchikan needs a better education. We need to build that positive learning environment. A more dynamic and innovative school district will increase the individual growth and academic achievements of our students. It's our job to get them where they're going, not to change them, and that's why I'm running for school board.
Well, that is it. We are just about out of time. I want to thank Camille Booth, Dave Turmerman, and Trevor Shaw for joining us today. It was a very informative hour, to say the least. And good luck. The election is on October 1st. That's correct. please, we encourage everybody to go to the polls that day. Thank you so much, guys, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks.